Beta Talk is the voice of the most important frontline health workers around the globe, plumbers. They, along with installers and engineers, are also at the forefront of global warming issues. Beta Talk aims to give them a voice, assisting the industry and enabling them to discuss energy, plumbing and heating topics. Beta Talk with your host Nathan Gambling is sponsored by IMI Hydronic Engineering, giving you a voice in a global industry.
All right, welcome to Beta Talk. I'm down in Corby, or up in Corby, I should say, meeting with Jason and Julian, who are from Stirling Gas Assessment Centre. Have I got that right, lads?
Stirling Assessment. Yeah.
Now, you may have seen Stirling on social media. They are my favourite gas centre, so I tried to talk about them quite a lot. And we're obviously going to be here today talking about gas training. So, Julian, I'm going to come to you first. You're a bit like me. You were in FE, Further Education, and you now have been working with Jason at this centre. Why did you leave Further Education?
Disillusionment is probably the easiest way of describing it. I felt that the situation in the FE sector has got to a critical level now. I found it rather embarrassing in the end. And students' lives are being affected by what's happening in the FE sector. And I found out talking to other colleges, it wasn't just an isolated thing for me where I was working. It seems to be a similar sort of story up and down the country. So it's not an isolated thing for me. So there's a lot of it going on. I just couldn't be in that environment anymore, to be honest.
Were you teaching just gas, or were you teaching sort of like the diploma and apprentices?
I was doing a lot, we were doing evening groups, which were great. I tended to work mainly with the apprenticeship framework, and then that, for whatever reason, politically or money-motivated reasons, got took off us. And then I sat back and watched that sort of collapse, which was soul-destroying for me because we put so much effort into it in that previous, 4 or 5 years prior to that. So it was soul-destroying, is the best way of describing it, yeah.
And then got asked to come and teach here.
Yeah.
Jason, how long has this centre been around in?
So we've been running since 1998, so basically the tail end of the ACOPS into the ACS. We're assessment centre number 5 in the ACS world, as it were.
Wow, so you were the 5th centre to be doing
to ACS. Be accredited for the ACS, yeah. Wow. So, so effectively, I've been here on assessing for 17 years now. We had a manager in here originally, which was an ex-college tutor, Dave, and I took over from David. And 5 years ago, Julian was on the market, came to my attention. I'd known Jules for years, and as soon as I knew that Jules was not very happy where he was, I kind of snapped him up, because knowing Julian's background and his passion for the industry, driving Stirling forward into the new marketplaces of training was what I wanted to do, and Jules was the perfect man for the job, really.
Now, what differentiates you as, because like I say, I promote you guys quite a lot, what differentiates you from other training centres, do you think?
I think our level of investment, we really want to drive best practice over and above passing assessments. We're really interested in making the engineers better for the companies that they work for, and upskilling them to a level where they feel they're not just no more advanced than when they walk through the door. They actually feel that they've learned something and they've enjoyed the experience. And I think Julian's training, you put so much effort into developing, bringing in new products, getting hands-on, getting manufacturers on board to demonstrate products and show the qualities that can be achieved out there. And I think that's where we sort of score, really.
Yeah, and I think we get a lot of reassessment guys coming in who, when they come in, they're sort of all down and, oh, I've got to go through this again and blah, blah, blah. And like we mentioned earlier, I think it's quite refreshing when they come out, because I think they look a bit scared to start with when I say, I'm not going to train you, I'm not going to tell you what the answers are over the road because I don't know what they are, I don't get involved in the assessment side of it. So we try and train them for what they actually need to know in the real world. So we make sure we go through all the ventilation, the pipe sizing, we make sure we do it in a detailed way that they get and they understand. And then when they go out of here, hopefully they've learned something. And it's quite refreshing to turn when they turn around and actually say, I enjoyed that, which is an unusual thing, I think, in ACS centres these days, is to actually say you've enjoyed something. I enjoy learning. I enjoy going to other training centres and seeing, you know, how it's done, how they do things different, etc. So, yeah, and I think the small class size as well. We only do six on any of the GAS courses. So we try and keep it at a level where people aren't afraid to say, I don't quite get that. Can we do that again, etc., etc. I think they get more out of it.
See, that's quite interesting, the numbers. We've discussed this in the past. There is actually a specific number when you come to assess that you're only allowed to assess. Have I got that right?
Yeah, three to one ratio or 4-to-1 ratio, depending on what base outs you've got.
So when you're being assessed for GAS, when you're taking it, when you're doing it in that classroom, you're only supposed to have four.
So when you're on practical assessment, you're only allowed to have a maximum of 4-to-1 assessor. So one assessor for four customers, candidates, whatever you want to call it, in the industry. So from my experience being out there, and obviously as assessors and trainers, if we're with our certification body, we can't be assessed by our certification body. We have to go to somebody else's. And in my experience of it out there, you know, you see class sizes of 15, 20s. You see workshops full of guys with one assessor keeping his eye on them. You know, I mean, let's get this straight. There are some fantastic training centres and assessment centres out there, the ones that, in my opinion, do the right thing and do it right. But ultimately, like in the college process, when there's a figure attached to training and assessment, a financial gain, you're always going to get the centres that are smashing them through.
I mean, from my knowledge, I mean, even some of the big GAS centres in this country, you know, as businesses, you know, their number one goal is to make a profit, and there's nothing wrong with that. And back in the day when training became a revenue stream, I think it created some problems. So we have got a situation now where some centres will take in quite a lot of people, and don't get me wrong, they've got some fantastic assessors. You know, I know some of them that teach there. Yeah. Fantastic assessors. But of course, they're struggling within a system that is actually training so many people, trying to get so many people through.
Yeah.
Things are bound to go wrong, aren't they? And
this is, I think, where we score, is the fact that we're not driven financially like that. We have got other businesses. We're fortunate enough in the Sterling Group to have other businesses. And the financial motivation is about putting more into the centre, making it better. That's what we want to do.
Reinvestment's important.
We reinvest massively. You know, buying kit, you know, we are heavily supported by our, you know, sponsors and things like that, but that only gives us more power to give to our customers. And it gives them to see the latest cutting edge kit, you know, for the likes of Testo and Rothenberger and Fleer and you know, Anton and AD and, you know, you name it, we got the gear. Well, pick the phone up, we get the gear. And it's all about showing our customers that stuff and saying, look, this could make your business better. This could make your life better. This could make your day-to-day work far more easier and more professional. You know, set yourself apart is what we're trying to get.
Because I notice you're obviously one of the AD test centres, so I know AD quite well. There's some great, fantastic people at AD that we all probably know, actually.
Yes, there is, yeah.
And so you're one of the AD centres.
Yeah, we promote their AD best practice here.
Yeah.
We've got, as you've probably seen on the socials, a big rig set up in our main training classroom. Glenn and Colin both come down and they do their AD training day here, which is, to be honest, free training, fantastic day. If any engineers, you know, listening to the blog, they want to learn more about best practice for the AD, whether it's Magna Cleanse, filtration, or even the, you know, their chemical side, but it's a real eye-opener. I tell you, really good.
Well, it's the chemical side that interests me. They're actually the newest in that sphere, the chemical sphere. And we all come from an era where we can remember sort of the transition to low water content heat exchangers and boilers being hung on walls. And that's when sort of the inhibitor market really started to grow.
That's right.
We've got a problem, and that's where inhibitors are actually being tested to destroy metals, some of them. It's a very, very open market, very saturated market. So you've got the big three that are probably making very good chemicals. I'm very impressed with ADs. I've been to their test centre. I think you've
Yeah, we've been there as well, and it is very
I'd advise anybody to go and see it for themselves. Once you've seen it firsthand, it's obvious. where the benchmark lies.
It's just a strange industry, the inhibitor industry, because we've got the bowler companies telling us for years and years and years, you must use inhibitor. Well, most people don't really know that there's good ones and there's bad ones, and these bad ones are really destroying. You know, we've still got a problem with corrosion in this country.
So I
was quite impressed with AD's inhibitor. Now we've got to a stage where some really fantastic engineers are using other methods to prevent corrosion and
European methods.
And I think if people like AD support them as well, supporting good practice. You know, no one's going to start rushing out and buying demineralisation units, but if you're going to choose the inhibitor route, choose a good quality stuff.
I think if
we get companies supporting engineers that are obviously really competent and doing other good things, so we should be supporting them rather than actually saying we should be doing it.
I agree. And it's also a business decision for them, isn't it? You know, they're buying into that equipment, they're investing in their business, you know, they're doing something maybe over and above, but at the end of the day, they're driving new technologies and new ideas. And I think with the advent of the social media side of things, you're starting actually to see what good looks like.
Yeah,
definitely.
You know, there's some fantastic guys on there doing some fantastic work, and Gillian and I, you know, comment on it and see it regularly. You know, and without naming names, but there are some amazing artistic work out there, and people taking pride in the work again.
Which I think is the main thing. And going back to the water stuff, we're actually in the process of developing a water wise course, which is an overview, because we've realised in the last 12 months that it is a big problem in the industry. And there's a real lack of knowledge based around that as well. So we're going to try and develop a course that's an overview of the whole thing, including the chemicals, the power flushing, the magma cleanse, the air separation. It does the whole lot.
So it's just one giving everybody a whole.
It's an overview of the industry. Because the new British standard's just been released as well, which I'm in the process of sort of dissecting at the moment. It seems to be promoting the sort of best practice side again for the UK, and that's what I think in this the whole filling systems up with the German sort of standard. I know a lot of engineers are going down that route now as well, so it's interesting to get involved in that as well and see what's
And it's not a new thing, is it? Manufacturing structures have been citing the British standards for water cleansing and all the rest of it for years,
and the warranties and
it's
getting
just how much notice it's been.
Boiler manufacturers are sampling water now, so it's becoming more of a serious issue now. And I think, it's going to get to the point when sampling water and actually maybe getting lab reports done and that sort of stuff is going to be the way forward, I think.
Once again, they've got a UCAS laboratory.
Exactly, fantastic facility. It seems to be an industry sort of secret as well, and nobody seems to be shouting about it.
Talk about UCAS. We actually had UCAS come here, I believe.
We were very fortunate. I say fortunate, it was terrifying, but we had UCAS down last year, Tallinn last year as a visit, so we were being inspected by our certification body, who were being inspected by UCAS, and it was fantastic, and he was very impressed with us and said we should be proud of what we've got here, which made my year, really.
For the listeners that don't know who UCAS are, I mean, they are the big guns of sort of the assessment industry. Yeah. And for them to say how well you're doing, that must have been really
He said I should be really proud of my centre and my team, is what he said to me. And I was
chuffed to bits.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But at the end of the day, it's right. The amount of hours, man hours and time it goes into it, and customer support. We work very closely with a company called GasApp UK, which is Anthony Provan, who's a great pal of mine. And we support that of an evening. We're on there all the time. It's a fantastic app.
Just offering advice, really.
That's got some fantastic stuff in it. Manufacturer's instructions. It's got service and breakdown side to it. It's got a break time where engineers are just chatting. It's a fantastic community.
He actually won an award recently.
Which we were fortunate enough to be dragged up on stage in front of thousands of people.
That was a bit of a surprise, almost a bit.
But again, fantastic app.
Is that the HMV
Awards? The second year running he's won an award there.
It's a fantastic event as well, I think.
It is a great event.
Very good event.
So we're heavily involved in that, and that, kind of all the teams, not just myself, but Julian, Gary, Nikki, everyone gets involved in that after hours. You know, our girl Nikki, she runs the show, really, don't she?
But effectively,
you can ring Nikki at the weekends, even she will take the call. She's phenomenal. You know, our customers ring her, they want to get booked in, they're like, when am I expiring and things like that, and Nicky will deal with it. And there's, you can't
the phone's
ask
always on
divert, that,
so she's never
you
she's
can't
never,
ask any more than that, you know.
She's never
so
off
we,
work.
Yeah, we are blessed at Stirling, we've got a fantastic team.
Going back to what, how Stirling are doing things a little bit different, when you take people on and they do their ACS. Now, we've got this thing about portfolio. We all know what portfolio is. It's basically evidencing that you've done on-site work. And I've been fairly critical about the portfolio because it can be abused, basically. You can
There's always going to be the chance. Yeah, no matter how you do portfolios, that's always going to be a threat, I guess.
How do you, so like you take on very, very small numbers anyway, how are the people that come to your centre, how are they doing their portfolio?
Well, we might, like I say, when we do the induction days, we insist that the mentor, whoever the mentor for that candidate's going to be, comes in for that induction day with them. They can see exactly what the portfolio is all about. So again, they have to commit to say that that candidate will be able to get that criteria. So the course is actually designed over 35 weeks, so we can take anybody in off the street, and effectively in 35 weeks they could become a gas engineer. We don't take them at that level. We take only the people that are working in the industry, and they can verify the fact they're working in the industry. Most of the guys that we've got on there now, and girls as well, I must admit, are known to us anyway. So they're customers of ours who have got people that may have been working with them for 5 or 6 years. So they've been working with them for quite a considerable time anyway. So we try and get the people that have already got some of that basic underpinning knowledge there, background knowledge. They may have a level 2 plumbing qualification and they've just not gone any further with it. So we're kind of taking them at a level already, if that makes sense.
Well, that's a commercial decision of ours.
Decision on ours, yeah.
Because effectively we feel they should have experience within the industry, actually be in the industry already, rather than coming from, say, a forklift truck driver or a bricklayer or whatever, and have got no underpinning industry experience at all.
The irony of that, though, is you are such a good training centre, it's probably best if the people that were thinking about transferring and going into a new job, it's probably best that they would come here, isn't it?
It is, but knowing what I know now, I mean, this is obviously the first time we've run the MLP, and we're sort of 2/3 of the way through.
Which stands
for
the managed learning program for those.
Managed learning program, yeah. And I would say that we would, I think you'd struggle realistically in 35 weeks to be able to take one day a week to teach all of the content for the matters of gas safety.
The thing is, the
properly in that time frame.
The managed learning program is based on a system of evidence generating in the field, working. And
that's where you do your learning at the end of the day.
If Stirling's remit was perhaps to take people's money and, you know, whether they get the on-site learning or not is really not that important, then perhaps that would be the angle we'd be looking at, but that's not what we're about. I don't want to stand there in front of a guy and take his money, knowing full well we can't produce the goods at the end of it. Because what are we doing? You know, we talked about
They've got to be confident. They've got to be confident in what they're doing. We've got to be confident in what they're doing. And obviously their mentor has to be confident in what they're doing. So we don't sign. It's a VOT system that NIC run, which is validation of training. So they have to do validation of training reports, assessments. And we won't put them through that validation of training assessment until we know that they've got sufficient evidence in their portfolio. Say they've been doing it on site, they've done sufficient stuff in here to know that they've been doing it, and then we'll put them through for the assessment.
Do people go, because you've got a commercial gas company as well, haven't you? Do sometimes people go out with that company and...
We tend to keep it separate, to be honest. Yeah. We don't really want to be taking our customers from MLP and putting them out on site.
Which is interesting because other gas centres will do that.
The biggest issue with us, the sort of places that we work, we're in schools all the time, you know, we're in high level, high security places, and it just causes a major headache for us, really. So we don't really entertain
that. Keep it separate, really.
We want the perfect storm for us is John that works with his dad, who's got a plumbing and heating firm, and John's been to college and done his MVQ level 2, and he's never gone through to do his level 3, but he's always wanted to do his gas, never quite got around to it, but he works with dad, or the company that can supply him with someone who's going to mentor him for the 35-week period and beyond, and effectively generate good quality evidence that actually John's doing it on site. He's not ticking boxes. He's not showing up at Mrs. Jones's and saying, well, there's one job, it's the gas fire. Well, there's another job, it's the boiler. Well, there's another job, and it's all in one property. You know,
so one job is one property.
Yeah, for us, the postcode is the job. So it doesn't matter what John's doing in that job.
And the important thing is that they hit all the criteria based on, so if they're decommissioning and then commissioning a new boiler, and then while they're there, they're visually inspecting a gas fire and a cooker. That's all part of one job, and then they just acknowledge the criteria they've covered whilst they're doing that address, if that makes sense. And it's funny you say tick box exercise, but our portfolio is tick box. But it's they're ticking to say that they've covered the criteria. So NIC have been clever in the fact that all the criteria is on all their job sheets. So all they've got to do is say what criteria they've covered. So rather than having to do paragraphs and paragraphs of written words say what they've done, it's all written down there for them. All they've got to do is acknowledge what they've actually covered on that particular job.
And when they come to do the relative, whatever, however you want to pronounce it.
Yeah, the tracking side of
when
it.
Yeah, it's track. So when they actually do their examination side of it as part of the MLP, we know they've hit that criteria. There's no point in putting him in for medium pressure if he's never done anything on medium pressure, because we're setting him up to fail that, aren't we, at the end of the day. So, you know, they have got to be in the field doing the work. And the way it's tracked, it's quite obvious at the end of, say, week three, he hasn't hit ventilation or gas rating or testing.
And then, the main thing is, once they've completed 25 jobs, it'll be on their tracker and there'll be gaps. So they haven't come across a leak on a gas pipe. They haven't introduced any of the unsafe bits they haven't covered, for example. So at that point, you can actually see that that's missing. And there are certain percentage of criteria that we can cover in here. Medium pressure is one that will always be covered in the centre, because in most areas, postcode areas, they don't get to see medium pressure. So it's something that we have to cover in the centre. So we make sure that we fill their job sheets out while they're actually doing the assessments on medium pressure in our workshops.
So you also, you've got Intergas stuff here, and I notice you've got a lot of Testo equipment here. I know Testo quite well. Their stuff's really, really good. Do they come and do training here as well?
Intergas? Intergas, yeah. Once a month. So once a month they'll bring between 10 and 12 guys down. And take them through all the product training. Obviously, we've got the new UK boilers in there, the Extreme and Exclusive, which seems to be going quite well. And obviously, we've got all the other range as well. So I think we've actually got 6 working boilers on site, 4 in this room, and then we've got the dummy model on the end, which is for stripping down purposes, I believe. But yeah, it seems to be going quite well. So they spend the day down here. I get kicked out of my classroom and have to go into the one next door. But we can facilitate all that now, so that's good.
Because you're the trainer and obviously you can't be in the assessment.
Yeah, well, I mean...
Well, this is just product training, so we just give them the run of the room, really.
Yeah,
so
it's designed so once they're in here, they don't have to be anywhere else in the training centre, as it were. So Jules has got access to the workshops and everything else without hampering them or them hampering us. And effectively, we've made the decision...
Yeah, it works well.
To put the Intergas wall in with all their boilers and that, purely and simply because we've got such a great relationship with them. They've supported us.
And you've got a Testo wall in one of your other rooms?
Yes, we've got a Testo wall in there. That's recently gone in. And it's great decoration for us, but obviously it's visually it's great for Testo because it's got all their products on it. But we just brought in the Testo Smart Probes, their Bluetooth range of probes, which I think you've...
I think I was speaking at FEX last week, and I think they were up for an award at the FEX show, actually.
They're a fantastic piece of
equipment. It's a good product, very good
so
product.
They've got the clamp range, so you can do like flame return temperatures on with the clamps. You've got laser thermometers, infrared, I think they are. They got a U-gauge manometer, digital manometer.
Yeah, that kit they do, you can get your clamp on, so you can be completely, you can stick your clamp somewhere, and you can be completely away from that, and it's reading what the temperature is
so
on your Bluetooth.
So you can be doing your commissioning on your boiler, you buy two clamps, for example, you can do a flow and return differential, you can do that, you can have that at the boiler, you can have your gauge on at the meter, and you can have it all on the phone doing reports. And
so you can do you're doing outlet operating pressure at the meter while you're actually at the boiler, and you can see on your phone what's actually happening while you're at the appliance. So
I would certainly encourage engineers to look into the smart Bluetooth technology, because it's just giving them.
So gone are the days where I'm somewhere in the house and Dad's shouting out, "Is it hot yet?"
You can be sat in the van. You can be sat in the van.
I've been there in the van, drinking my cup of tea, what temperature that flows.
Yeah. Fantastic. But and also we've got involved with Testo for their thermal imaging as well.
I'm a big supporter of
the because they do a fantastic... I mean, we do a lot with FLIR and have done through the years... But Testo have got a gun system, which is quite a robust system, but at a great price point.
Yeah.
So whereas the FLIR range starts to get expensive very quickly, Testo sort of come in at this right price point, I feel, which is the sub £1,000 mark for a really, really good bit of kit.
Yeah, I wrote an article for FAM News about the FLIR. Because I'm a very, very sort of big advocate of getting thermal imaging into this.
Yeah,
I've done a little bit of pieces.
It's fantastic.
Little bits and pieces with Fluke, but the Testo stuff is amazing, and I got them to actually speak with me on the podcast for FEX actually. Now I notice you've got these Crocon CO alarms.
Personal CO alarms. Yeah.
You're big into promoting people wearing these.
Massively. We have them in the assessment centre, so on an assessment before they walk through the door. We gear them up, so they have a personal CO alarm, and we get them, what's this all about, blah, blah, blah. And it's basically raising their level of awareness. They don't know what they're walking into when they walk through the door at Mrs. Jones's.
If you work on your own as a maintenance engineer, then you are susceptible to that. You could be coming across an old appliance. Granted, the majority of the risks probably are in the commercial world, but obviously there is still a lot of older appliances out there domestically. Flueless appliances coming in as well, obviously badly burning cooking appliances. There's lots of way they can be hit with CO, and we always sort of bang on about looking after Mrs. Jones, have they got a CO alarm, but who's looking after the engineer at the end of the day? If you work on your own in that environment, you are opening yourself up really. So,
and I think for £100 anywhere, you can pick them up anywhere for 108 quid, I think, plus that, you know, for the sake of 130 quid, you've got 2 years cover with a Crocon CO alarm. And they're like the best in the market. They do all. They do mining. They do petrochemical. They do the lot.
All the gas rigs.
That's where we promote them, because they're fantastic bits of kit.
Very robust.
And very
as well.
Small and easy to carry around. But one thing I will say about them, and this is a massive misconception, a lot of guys, you see them, and I have this with my own engineers. It's on the belt or in the toolbox or in the front of the van. It's not going to protect you in the front of the van or in the toolbox. You've got to have it within
they reckon, where your airway
6 inches of your airway. Yeah. Because effectively CO dropping, that's where you're breathing it in. And you need to have it up there on your collar, clipped on your jacket collar, within I would say 6 inches of your airway. Mm. You don't want it on your clip to your belt. You don't want it in your toolbox. Because by the time it gets down there, you don't know how much CO you can take in your body build up, your body mass. You could be a goner, or you could be a very poorly person. Mm.
Well, the trouble is with CO, it incapacitates very quickly, doesn't it?
Mm.
So even though something might be going wrong, it may be too late by that point.
Mm. I know from experience, so some of the clients I'm thinking of, they've seen their engineers coming into their premises wearing their Crocon, and they actually think, wow, these guys are professional.
Level of professionalism.
Just because they're wearing one of these things. So it actually sort of promotes you as being common, saying just because you wear one, your arm will be good. But it does it for the client. I mean, I know some of the clients in my cousin's industry that they get very they must be good because they're wearing these things. I think it can actually sort of promote you as being quite
definitely
a good company, can't it?
Yeah. A lot of this stuff does, doesn't it? It raises a professional profile, definitely.
So I noticed that Sterling, you sponsor someone, don't you? Sponsor someone in the GB team?
Yeah, so we've, last year, a friend of my family's, a daughter, Ruby, she was shooting under 18 archery, got herself into Team GB, and now she's in the under 21s.
Brilliant.
And she's been out to Slovenia and European countries shooting on, for Team GB. And because they get no support whatsoever, we thought, realistically, this is before she got into Team GB that we should be really helping her out and trying to get her some kit and
she even has to buy her own shirts and Team
and,
GB
and to
kit.
Be fair, she's kind of outdone all of our expectations. Really, she's done so amazingly well because she spends her life effectively training and training and training.
Well, so it's, you've got this training centre. I mean, are you thinking of expanding, or is this just what you want to do? Have a nice little training centre. Are you thinking of maybe expanding and having a
to be honest, we've wrestled with this ourselves, haven't we?
Yeah, and we've and, talked about MVQ,
you know, we could have other assessors in, we could have other trainers in, we could expand, we could take the unit next door. Do we want to dilute the magic that we've got here? Because personally, I think we've got lightning in a bottle here, and we're doing well enough. I'm not personally prepared to dilute that, because you know, the bigger you get, the less control. To
what's your catchment there? I mean, how far do people come?
We go out to Peterborough. We go Northampton, Milton Keynes. We go Market Harborough. We go Leicester. We go Australia. We go.
you had someone from Australia once.
Yeah. We go Essex.
We've had Australia and New Zealand.
We get people come from all over. You know, Sean Barrett, who's big on the yep. Twitters, he comes up here.
I mean, Marie,
she's on our managed learning program at the minute. She's doing fantastic, actually.
Yeah, she's doing really well.
Sean used to live in Kettering, so you know, he's a customer of old, and you kind of go where you know, don't you? So.
And he's kept some of his local customers as well. So yeah. He comes up every now and again. And
we've had two customers now come to us from Australia, haven't we? They've come back to see family and friends, and they want to keep their ACS, and they're working out there, and you know, and they've chosen to come to us, which is amazing. And I always look at it like, customers have got a choice where they go. They don't have to go to Stirling. You know, and we're grateful for the fact that they choose us. You know, it's not a gimme. They go wherever they want. So we like to think that the harder we try, the more we do, the more input we put in, the more level of equipment we offer.
Well, it just keeps the customers coming back. They spend a lot of money on renewing their ICS, and they do. Everybody, I mean, we've done it. We've all done it, and you do begrudge having to pay every 5 years to do that. But we offer a service, and you should expect value for money. And if we give them value for money and they enjoy their experience here, then they'll come back. Mm. So in 5 years' time, we'll see them again.
Do you offer, I mean, as we all know, there's some engineers out there that are really passionate about learning, and obviously they're having to take on board that learning. This is why social media is good. They can sort of, but they've probably done their ACS at a centre and they've come out and they're now thinking, crikey, I don't feel that competent. Do you... is there something that they can, so could they actually then come here and do a course just to sort of gen up on some knowledge and feel like they've actually trained to a good standard?
I mean, we offer the issue with reassessment, guys, is training isn't a prerequisite. It's not mandatory.
No.
You know, I've always done training because you always pick something up along the way, as I'm sure you'd agree. No one knows everything. You know, and I defy anybody to say they do.
You've got to be humble in this industry.
Especially in our industry, because it's an ever-moving, ever-changing, things get, you know, manufacturers' instructions go out of date, they've stopped producing this, they've changed that. You come into an industry at a certain point, it's very difficult to keep up to speed with it. And no gas engineer that I know of keeps all the British standards in the back of his van. But I find... I've lost my train of thought now.
I do know one actually. Yeah. I do know someone that actually keeps all the British standards, and they're a fantastic engineer. I'm just looking at your wall, and I can see a picture of a gas rig. Now, I was speaking not so long ago in Stawler on a panel about how we've got this thing coming in, the banning of gas boilers in new builds by 2025. Now, obviously. That's kind of something within your sort of sphere. What do you feel about that? Obviously, we've now got sort of talking about renewables. What's your sort of thoughts on that?
I think the renewable side of things. I think we've been there with renewables, haven't we?
A few years ago. I think a lot of the, I don't know. It just seemed to me that the heat incentives were all sort of swallowed up by some of the bigger players, maybe, in the industry. And rule change.
And massive amounts of, that's what I was getting, massive amounts of red tape and massive amounts of, you know,
Also design as well. I think heat pumps, for example, are so design sensitive. I think in the early days, you maybe had plumbers who were looking at boilers and heat pump and thinking, oh, what's the difference? When obviously there's a massive difference design-wise. So I think there's been a massive, again, under sort of estimation of what's involved in it as well. So obviously it's coming and it's going to happen. I just think they've got this knee-jerk reaction type thing of, yeah, we're just going to stop gas boilers. They said it in 2016, then they said 2020, didn't they? Mm-hmm. We're going to do it, and now it's 2025. And I just don't think it's something you can just do. You can't just do a blanket ban. And the fact is, what are they going to replace it with? Replace them with electric. They're trying to get everybody to go electric, which is not exactly green, is it?
It's a very sensitive subject, and it causes lots of debate.
It does, of course it does, and that's how it should be. But
the good thing is, it's brought other. Engineers have now got a voice, and as they should have. With engineers are probably the first ones people should be listening to. So social media is now making all these other organisations and people that are concerned about the environment and concerned about and know a little bit about renewables, but it's given the engineers a voice. As a training centre, is it something that you might want to get into in the future?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't get involved in it in the early days, purely and simply because there was so much red tape, so much paperwork involved, and misconceptions and pots of money for this and pots of money for that, and now there isn't pots of money, and you know, it's all sort of incentive driven, I think at the time, and the cost of fitting these things was astronomical. You know, solar panels and all the rest of it were really, really expensive. And I just think, for as a business model, as a gas engineers heating company, I think looking at renewables as an alternative, viable alternative, rather than we're doing that because the customer can claim back X amount of money.
And I think that's the biggest problem, again, is consumer awareness. You've got to convince your customers that that's what they want. And I think that's been one of the biggest stumbling blocks in the past, and I think it's still there now. So I don't think saying we're going to ban gas boilers is necessarily the right way of doing it. I think the systems we've got in place now need to be made more efficient, which again seems to be taking steps in that direction.
But again, a lot of that's system design, isn't it? You know, we're putting 28 kilowatt boilers in flats and things like that.
It's down to the education of the engineers at the end of the day, you know, and stop banging these massive boilers in all over the place.
Going back to that point, I mean, I think industry are now listening to sort of the engineers who are saying, look, you know, come on, we've been teaching people about gas boilers, and the boiler industry's obviously got behind, you know, we've got a very, very big boiler industry in this country. And it seems that over the last few decades, the knowledge of system design has sort of been lost. And I don't think it's not the engineer's fault, it's just how the industry that they're now within. So when Julian and I, years calculators were... being used, and we all know Rob, who's trying to promote
the heat line.
It's just so silly.
Software, which is a fantastic bit of kit.
Yeah. So silly that heat loss calculations haven't been performed. Once again, I don't think it's the engineers. I think it's just the industry's got so.
I think the apprenticeship framework got watered down somewhat. A lot of that important stuff seemed to be getting missed.
Bizarrely, at level three and Testament to Sitting Guilds. I mean, I might sometimes. Be a little bit, I mean, I know Sitting Guilds people very, very well, and actually, there's some very, very good people in Sitting Guilds. But and level three, they do design quite an extensive level. So the heat loss, they're doing it all shorthand, longhand, I should say, and they're studying it implicitly. The trouble is that as an apprentice, they then go out with the next day, they're with their firm, and
who don't do any of it.
No, exactly that.
And so, we find that on the gas side, when we're talking about pipe sizing and undersized gas supplies and da da da, and they're not doing that either. So you're in this sort of catch-22 situation where on one hand you're being taught best practice, but actually in practical terms in the field it's not being done, because it's almost, I don't want to get into this too much, but it's kind of a race to the bottom. You know, we're price driven, aren't we? Mrs. Jones wants the boiler swapped, and she don't want to have a magnetic filtration, she don't want to have this, she don't want to have that, she wants the cheapest possible price.
And again, it goes back to consumers again.
Someone's going to do that.
Consumer awareness.
Because they don't know what good looks like, as you've pointed out, you know, before. It's, you know, how we get that message across to the consumer that this is the benchmark, if you like, this is what it should be. This is how your system should look, and it should be designed, and it should be the nice copper pipes polished up with the nice solid joints, and it's designed properly. And we see it on Twitter all the time, don't we?
Good customers jobs. Don't know about benchmarks. They don't know the boiler needs filtration. Doesn't know the system needs cleaning before the new boiler goes in.
And what level that's been done to.
The registration. They don't know any of that, do they?
No, AD's water testing, picking that straight up. They do a fantastic water testing system. Yeah. Turn it around within 24 hours.
Fantastic,
send it away, get your water sample done, you get a certificate to say, when I left that job,
that's what it was.
Pucker.
So you've got a laboratory report, basically, to go with your benchmark to say
what
that
Mr. Jones
system
does
like.
A bit of decorating in 3 months' time, drops a radiator and all the inhibitor out of the system. Tops it back up, and then they get a warranty call on the boiler in 8 months, 9 months' time. You know, with all due respect to the guys that are doing the over and above best practice, you know, they're not having the issue because the certificate saying, well, when I left the job, it was done. Perfect. Proof. Mm. There you go.
That's actually a good point. I mean, as we get longer warranties on boilers, and, you know, the boiler manufacturers are probably going to be sort of looking more.
They're going to be
water quality.
Yeah.
So it's going to be sort of. So this is where the AD testing comes in for an engineer. They've
massively
covered themselves, haven't they?
I think they're pretty much all saying that they will be sampling water. So.
Well, drawing to an end. I'm so grateful that you've let me come to your centre
anytime,
and set up my little podcast.
That's fantastic.
I've always been very impressed with your centre and how you do things.
Thanks very much.
I suggest if anyone's in the area and they're up for their reassessment, this is a great, fantastic. I mean, there might be a waiting list because they only teach a very small number at a certain time.
Nicky can normally sort things out,
But no, thanks ever so much, lads.
You're welcome, mate.
And
I
hope to see you soon.
Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thanks very much.
Thank you for listening to an episode of Beta Talk. Season 1 has been sponsored by IMI Hydronic Engineering. I've been your host, Nathan Gambling. You can find me on Twitter under the name Beta Teach. You can also find Beta Talk on Twitter. And if you need to contact me, you can use my email, learn@betateach.co.uk. You can also look at the website, betateach.co.uk, to see what's going on over there. Thank you once again for listening, and I hope you enjoy future episodes. Thank you.